evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Hawk coming to you live. It is Friday night, 10/25/2019. And, oh, old Emperor Palpatine himself, George Soros, says that everything is going to turn back to the globalists. Well, let me tell you something, Mr. Soros, and your Elizabeth Warren and all your socialist stuff, and the very fact that you admitted on TV back years ago that even though you were Jewish, that you helped Nazis take Jews' properties. So you're a scumbag, Mr. Soros. You're Emperor Palpatine. You are evil. And you just wait. Your penthouse won't save you in, you know, looking out of Central Park there in the Upper East Side. It will not save you. And you better get your helicopter ready, because then who knows? Maybe somebody's going to meet you out in Tarrytown, you know? But I'll tell you what. May Lord Jesus right now go and descend upon you in your penthouse, sir, and may he confound your speech. May he make you stumble in the ways. May he make you fall into the pits of your own bile and your own saliva, slobber, and urine. Mr. Soros, Mr. Soros and your handlers, yes, your handlers, those who worship Lucifer, the Lightbringer, that family I believe that you front for, yes, the Red Shields, allegedly, because they are Luciferians. They claim descendants from Nimrod and Semiramis. And as the Halloween appears this time coming up, may Lord Jesus and our Father in Heaven protect President Trump and all of those who are Christians and Jews and everybody in America that is for freedom and the Bill of Rights. And that anybody who is of the communist demonic bit, that they should fall into the ditch and start to twitch, you see? And we'll pay them no never mind, as Lucifer himself will welcome them down into the nether regions. And they will go into the fiery furnace. You know, I'll tell you what. This stuff is like, you're going to have to take the gloves off here before too long, you know. The gloves are going to have to come off, because I'd say this. People are still not getting it quite yet, you know. But let's go to one of my favorite ones. Let's see here what I got. Okay. Yeah, there we go. We're going to go to Matthew again, and we're going to see it right here. He that soweth the good seed is the Son of Man. This is Matthew 13, and this is verse starting at 37. And the field of the world, the good seed are the children of the kingdom, but the tares are the children of the wicked one. The enemy that sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the world, and the reapers are the angels. And therefore the tares are gathered and burned in the fire. So shall it be in the end of this world. The Son of Man shall send forth his angels, and they shall gather out of his kingdom all things that offend, and them which do iniquity, and shall cast them into the furnace of fire, and there shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. And then shall the righteous shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Who hath ears to hear? Let him hear. And again, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a treasure hid in the field, the which when a man hath found, he hideth, and for joy thereof goeth and selleth all that he hath, and buyeth that field. And again, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. And again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a net that was cast into the sea and gathered of every kind, which when it was full, they drew it ashore and sat down and gathered the good into vessels and cast the bad away. So shall it be at the end of the world. The angels shall come forth and sever the wicked from among the just, and shall cast them into the furnace of fire, and there shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. And Jesus saith unto them, have ye understood all these things? Ladies and gentlemen, some more things that are starting to be interesting. And if you recall, I told you about this way back in 2017. And I'm just now hearing, oh, Gerardo Rivera made the great thing that there absolutely was wiretapping there at the blah, 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 at the Trump Tower. And now there it is, blah, 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 blah. Well, first of all, you got Bull Durham is going to be able to call a grand jury and all the subpoenas and all that kind of stuff. And all that's well and good, but that doesn't mean that anything's going to be done. It might mean that they're scaring the heck out of them and that there will be favors called and things done that will be all done within the purview of the CIA and the NSA and the DIA and the EIEIO, you know? And the NRO and the ha-ha-ha and the hook. You see, this stuff just goes on and on and on. But here's what I talked to you about back in March 17th, in that time period of 2017. And the title was called Tapping President Trump's Wires, A Spy Hunter's Perspective. And the authors were James M. Atkinson and Stan Spring. And here's the synopsis. Our modern day lives are brief, very intense flashes of light circling the world on ultra pure puffs of smoke, and our government craves to capture all those flashes of lights. On March 4, 2017, President Donald Trump, the 45th President of the United States, penned the following tweet. March 4, early Saturday morning, while away at the Mar-a-Lago estate, Trump fired up his first tweet, accusing Obama of wiretapping his phones at Trump Tower in New York during the election. And that spawned all the furor, but here is the key to the whole deal, you see. And this is about a, I don't know, maybe a 50, 60 page, 40 page document. And it's quite extensive. Let me read the name of it to you again. The title is, maybe you can find it, Tapping President Trump's Wires, A Spy Hunter's Perspective. Authors, James M. Atkinson and Stan Spring. Publication date, March 17, 2017. So here, you got the old type of systems where they had the old copper cables and all that, and they had a central, you know, box in a building or, you know, at the corner of the street and all that. And we've all seen, you know, Robert Redford in the movie, you know, Gene Hackman in the movie, where he plays Brill for the first time. I actually know Brill, by the way. There is somebody that's like a real Brill, and I happen to have talked to him. But be that as it may, today we have something called fiber optic systems. With the explosive consumer growth, the internet, cell phones, fiber optic transmission systems are the preferred connection, also the Wi-Fis. Presently, the U.S. is interlaced with millions of cabling. Today's fiber optic systems use multiplexers. Just like the old copper cable systems did before, the rise of modern fiber optic multiplexers reaches thousands of miles rather than copper system multiplexers that reached only a few miles. Modern fiber enables the multiplexings of millions of customers on a single fiber, the size of a human hair. And despite the small size, fiber renders astounding reliability and accuracy. Now, while fiber optic multiplex systems deliver high-quality, efficient communications, they contain inherent vulnerabilities and serious weaknesses that can be equally exploited as a superb, massive-scale surveillance system. The fly in the ointment. Most glaring vulnerability can be exploited with the physical access to the multiplexer. The physical access to the multiplexer, ladies and gentlemen, tens of thousands of phones and computers can be invaded. By gaining physical access to the multiplexer, the software that runs the multiplexers can be hacked so that all communication can be received at listening posts in Konya, Hawaii, or Lackland, Texas, for example. So where are these multiplexers? Multiplexers are everywhere. It's no secret that the occupants of Trump Tower, like many luxury high-rise buildings in New York, have multiplexers to operate their fiber optic systems, you see. So what they did do is to access the multiplexers, and then the NSA has access to all of them, basically. They have access to all of the stuff in the Wi-Fi, in the air, on the fiber optics, on the copper lines. And here is, they can get into them pretty easy. Trump Tower could have been compromised and tapped, compromised with that with zero oversight. The invasion of the multiplexers is more insidious than any eavesdropping performed during the days of copper wire. Not only can all communications be intercepted, but harmless desktop phones, computer cameras, cell phones, tablets, television can be remotely activated for full audio and video surveillance of a person's every movement. We're talking 1984 here, people. The microphones and the desktop phones, the cell phones, computers, laptops, tablets, and televisions can be activated even when these devices are off. You want to tell something to the government, stare right into your big screen and sound right off. And I'll tell you, you'll get it right to them. And then the AI will start to watch you, you see. Freedom from detection, usually no eavesdropper likes to get caught. But one problem with penetrating multiplexer in the software is that it is not completely complexly difficult to track additional fiber optic cables attached to a target system. By merely manipulating the multiplexer and its software, a skilled eavesdropper can ensure his or her freedom from capture. This does not mean that the eavesdropper is bulletproof. It does mean that it takes a highly skilled, well-equipped spy hunter to catch the eavesdropper. Access by default, and that's the key that was there to help the eavesdroppers, you see. Millions of AT&T, Lucent, Conexant, Optosphere, Fujitsu, and other fiber optic products in use throughout the United States. Believe it or not, the factory default accounts and default passwords are present in many of the systems even decades after their initial installation. In less than a minute of physical access to those multiplexers, multiple backdoors can be injected into the system for further future use. Most remarkably, most multiplexers are installed in locked steel cabinets. Typically, these cabinets, however, literally have no back whatsoever. Others, while locked, often have a key hanging next to the secure multiplexer, or the key is actually in the lock. Ironically, it is the exception and not the norm to find the keys and passwords to multiplexers are not written on the lockbox with keys hanging next to the box. Buildings in New York City, Boston, Chicago, Atlanta, and other major cities There is no exception to the norm. Now, where does all this stuff go once they get it? And believe me, they've got it all. Just got it all. And then you have something that is called in New York, Fairview Long Lines, Titan Point Skyscraper. The U.S. government has a series of contracts with AT&T in which AT&T agrees to permit the federal government unsupervised access to all customer communications that passed over its underseas cables, okay? Domestic transmission facilities and domestic switching systems. Everything. In these documents, AT&T is given a special code name. Each of its facilities where this sort of eavesdropping takes place is given a different code name. For example, there are several major access points that are on domestic soil, which AT&T Fairview has given the NSA access to, which use location code names such as Killington, Copper Mountain, Maverick, Whistler, Sun Valley, Cliffside, Tahoe, Breckenridge, Eagle, Eden, Titan Point, which is at 33 Thomas Street in New York City, Pinecone, Silver, Column, and others. The AT&T Long Lines building at 33 Thomas Street, codenamed Titan Point, is operated by AT&T under the code name of Lithium, with Rimrock Access, a code name of for a hack into the 4ESS switching system, and also to the code name Rimrock program by way of the satellite dishes on the roof, and thus by the way of the cable vault in the third basement, virtually anything. Pretty detailed little report, isn't it? Let me get to this. The third basement in New York City. Everything in New York City can be tapped or tracked, and vast swaths of the inside of the building, as well as access to fiber optic systems, are rented to the NSA and even to the FBI. The Titan Point is fed data from the Pinecone facility, which provides control and access to shared fiber optic backboard and the proprietary cables. This collected data is then funneled into the corporate networks of AT&T Blarney, local area network, high decibel, and then into the corporate AT&T network to the code name of Pinwheel Ragtime servers, which harvest based on dictionary task terms. But all of the aforementioned networks, access points, and hard drives all fall under the umbrella of codename Fairview. AT&T or Verizon controls the fiber optic or copper cables when they enter the cable subterranean vault, and then AT&T operated the initial router or a multiplexer that handled the cable fiber that enters the building. Then AT&T runs the Pinecone SCIF inside Titan Point, which they then hand off to another router multiplexer in a co-location interconnection point. They hand off the data from AT&T at that point to the NSA under an interface called Wealthy Custer, an NSA machine, the first NSA machine in the stream, which stitches together this bits and bytes to reconstruct the intercepted data, which is then forwarded to another NSA-owned and operated system called mail order, which then sends the data to an AT&T gateway between mail order and Blarney, and then the NSA leased lines to this NSA server called Pinwheel Ragtime. And then you see, then they send it around the world. And then it goes somewhere, and the NSA sometimes doesn't get it directly, but it goes, let's say, to GCHQ, who then sends it to Australian signal intelligence, who then sends it to New Zealand signal intelligence, who then beams it to Canadian signal intelligence, who then sends it to the NSA. So when they tell you in the congressional hearing, and General Clapper and all these people can lie to you, stinking liars, and I hope that Barr goes after them, although I wouldn't bet on it. Remember when Clapper lied directly to the senator or the congressman, whatever it was, and the cops, you know, cops in a small town wouldn't believe you if you talked to that way and lied to them in that fashion. You remember that? When he was, I think it was the guy from Oregon, Wyeth. Wyeth. W-Y-E-T-H or whatever. Wyeth was the guy's name. And he kept asking Clapper, does the United States government wiretap everybody in the United States? And he said, well, not knowingly, without warrants. Well, of course you do. Why did you build all of the stuff out there in Utah and take all the water from the doggone Colorado River to cool it down in the cloud? So, ladies and gentlemen, when I hear these people like Geraldo Rivera and all these people speculate that maybe there was a wiretap, since 2017, I read this stuff to you on air and told you exactly how it's done. So who's zooming who? Once more, the title of this is Tapping President Trump's Wires, A Spy Hunter's Perspective. Authors are James M. Atkinson and Stan Spring, and the publication date, March 17th, 2017. Ladies and gentlemen, they've got everything. If you think that you got privacy of conversation or anything, somebody just sent me, hello there, Mr. Malibu SS. So the fact of the matter is here, ladies and gentlemen, they've got everything that you're talking about, everything you say. I mean, so therefore, utilize that and tell them that you got your K-bar sharp and that wherever you turn your household, you've got a firearm, okay? And that you believe in the Declaration of Independence, and that you believe in the Bill of Rights and the Constitution of the United States, and that you also have been given by Lord Jesus power and dominion over the serpents and scorpions and all power of the enemy. And here you go. Let's say hello out there to the good peace officers down there in the crossroads and all over the country. And one of the buddies in the crossroads said to tell Liz Evenson that he heard just at random, it was playing on YouTube today, and it was Brother Quayle and Brother Greg Evenson. You know, some interview from long ago, it just popped up, you know, in a series that he was listening to on YouTube. And I just wanted to say hello to Liz Evenson tonight. And this peace officer wanted to tell her that Greg is not forgotten and he's very well missed in the midst. And everybody remembers who he is, who he was, and it is who he is. Because I'm going to tell you something. Old Greg made it to heaven. And I could see his smiling face on the streets up there after he passed. But whenever I used to read this, Greg always liked it. Because he used to tell me that Hawk says, when you read that Declaration of Independence thing, that's pretty good, man. And here it is, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. And the Declaration of Independence is the law of the land that founded this country. And that's what we're founded on. And if you do not have firearms, then go out and get one, two, or three. If preferable, you should get a rifle, whether it be a bolt action, you know, with a scope, or you can reach out there with a 308 or a 338 Lapua or a Ronnie Barrett 50 cal or a, you know, a 300 Win or a 30-06 that Grandpa had. Nothing wrong with those, is there? That 30-06, you know, that was the old M1 shell, if you know what I mean. And if you got an old M1, nothing wrong with one of them either, you see. Or you can get a 223. One of the new M4 type, carbine type packages or AR-15 packages. Or the one that's worldwide, done more in than anybody, is the semi-automatic, which means you only get one round for each pull of the trigger. Not a full automatic burst, as all these idiots like Beto and all these idiots think about. But still, it's a gun meant for peasants. Somebody like me, who may not be the best at cleaning and shining them up. Or if you're sitting in a sandy beach, or if you're in a mud hole in a swamp, and you can't get to cleaning, and you're on the hide, and you're hiding in a canebrake from a man or two that you can't seem to shake, and they got the dogs on you, well, let me tell you something. You're going to want the Chinese deer gun or the Romanian deer gun or the AK-47 semi-automatic variant, like a MAC-90, MAK-90, or whatever it might be. Because you can literally sit there and you can fill them up with water and salt water and sand and stuff. You can take it out, shake all the junk out of it. You can pull back that bolt and let her rip and she'll go. It was designed for Russian peasants to use as an assault weapon, as a rifle, and it won't go out there, you know, 10,000 miles, and the accuracy may not be the best and all that, but I'm going to tell you what, it ain't that bad either. And inside of 400, inside of 300, and a lot of the stuff that gets done is at 100 or 200 yards, is it not? So anyway, you can get you either one of those type of things. If you got a lot of money, get you a good one, you know. Get you a 308, get you something like that, get you an HK or, you know, whatever it might be. But the other thing you need is a 12-gauge pump. Oh, you can have a you can have an automatic shotgun if you want. But there's nothing wrong with a 12-gauge pump and a little bit of oil, you know. Oil that slide up a little bit and get that thing worked in good. And there ain't no sound like it when you rack that thing back. Click, ka-ching, you know. And then if you had double-odd buck, number 4 buck, flechette rounds, the little darts that just go through the trees and bushes like crazy. They'll also work in open air, too. Kind of tends to shred the target. Or you can get those ones where you can pop them out and the old fire kind of shoots out there. Or you can get the ones that are sail cutters that are maybe got two big steel balls with a chain across them that fly through the air and they go, whoosh, 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 you know? You can get a lot of that stuff. And then if you've got X-ray, and if you're sitting out there, and if you do not have any of it, and you've got a, you know, an IRA, a 401k, a big bank account, whatever it might be, and you don't have anything to protect yourself, you darn well better get it. Now, I like Glocks. I like them because they're basically pretty simple, pretty foolproof. They're easy to strip and clean, all right? They fit in my hand good. I've got different ones, all right? I like the Glock 19, and I also like the Glock with the 40 cal. I used to have one that was a Glock 21 that was a 45 cal, but that got stolen in the Carolinas years ago. Right out of a car, you know, which I did report, so don't go to looking for it so you can, you know what I'm saying. But anyway, get you some of each. And if you do not have web gear, a pistol belt with an entrenching tool, and I still like the old-fashioned canteens. The canteens from the Vietnam War era or the, you know, or the even the old metal ones from World War II. But generally you find the hard plastic ones with the canteen covers, which, of course, you can wet those down, and that will keep it cooler, will it not? And then get you one, or you've got the canteen cup, and you put it over it, because then you can pour a little chunky soup in there, or a little Progresso soup, or a little Spam, and you can just hold it out over your fire and cook your stuff. Now, why am I going into all this basic thing? Well, I was in the military, I had to do all that stuff, and I've got the backpack this and the backpack that, and I've got Molly and blah, 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 blah. Because I'm old school, and you can go on the hoof to a surplus store in your area. An Army-Navy store, they used to call them, or a surplus store, or a military surplus store, whatever it might be. If you're in Gardena, California, go to Major Surplus. If he was in Kansas City, Kansas, go down to Mickey's in Argentine District. But there's a jillion of these all over. I used to travel all over on the road in the United States for a living years ago. And I would see them wherever I go, and I'd always stop in and I'd always buy some. And I still like the old Alice packs. I've got the big Alice. I've got a medium Alice. I've got the little metal frame with the little shoulder, you know, the little ledge you can set them on. But in a pinch, you can just use any of them regular. And then I've also got a small mini pack that's designed after the Alice. And I like that because that, I believe, is about a, in the field, maybe 6-7 days out in the field where you can fill it all up. But the way I like to set them up with the butt pack as well on the back of the old pistol belts with the clips and the Alice clips and all the different stuff. And you can do that because you can outfit yourself fairly cheaply. And if you get the suspenders and all the things, you can put your knife K-bar and tape it around one of your suspenders, pull it out that way, like a lot of guys used to do. You can have it on your belt, too, if you want to cross-draw or do something like that. And you can have a pistol holster strapped down on your leg or at your side, whatever you want to do it. Get a NATO holster. I like the drop leg with extra mags, and then at the same time, I like to put the ammo pouches, the mag pouches. And for instance, I've got them set where I've got them with the 7.62x39 pouches and filled with mags for that kind of a rifle. Or I've got it set for 223. And I've got those, and I generally try to have, and it's heavy. It's a little bit heavier, but I'm going to tell you, if you're going to operate for a while, you're going to need it, because there's no resupply of helicopters, you know. There's no war horse pulling donkeys like in World War One. All right? There's no Jeep going to bring it. You're going to have to carry it. But I'd like to have at least, oh, I don't know. The guys that I told me, guys like Greg Evenson, they told me that they might carry 12 magazines, you know, 12 30-round mags, all right? Something like that, 10 30-round mags. 300 rounds somewhere in that range, all set up, ready to go. And then if you had the ability, and years ago, I don't know if he's still got it or not. I doubt whether he has any of these, but ready-made resources, Bob Griswold, had some high-quality level 4 body armor that was made in Germany and came fresh, unused, not no hits upon it, no shots taken on it, anything like that, that came out of the Balkans, all right? Out of Croatia, I believe, or out of Serbia or Croatia or Bosnia, one of those areas over in the Balkans. And I can remember Bo Greitz talking about that on the radio back then. Old Colonel Bo Greitz. And saying, Bob Griswold has got a few of these left, and I called up, I bought two of them. But that was long ago, and that's when I had a pretty good job, and I could work, you know. I could work for longer than a few minutes, and the same time, don't ever just come and think that you got me, because I'm dogged and I'll not run down the road, but I can sure chase you down the road or meet you before you get there with something else. And my old friends out there in Walla Walla laugh about that when they hear me say that. And in other states as well, I've had a lot of people comment on that one. But I talked to you last night about Civil War II. The Coming Breakup of America. It was a book by Thomas W. Chittum, C-H-I-T-T-U-M, Thomas W. Chittum, and he laid it all out pretty well, by golly. And you go through these different phases, and the phase, you know, phase one, we've already basically passed that. The foundational phase. That was tribalism, creeping loss of democracy by shifting real power away from elected officials and to non-elected judges. Gradually falling wages starting in 1972, and yet increased wealth for the property-owning class. Slow decay of physical infrastructure of the cities. You see, we already been through all of this. Massive publicity drive to call for gun control in the name of law and order. Appearance and massive appearance of street gangs. Co-option of the mass media, especially the electronic media, to de-emphasize some events and highlight others. The fake news. The terroristic phase is currently what we're in. I read you some of those last night. But then the next one is going to be the guerrilla war phase, you see. And this will be characterized by the appearances of larger groups of heavily armed and full-time urban and rural guerrillas, not unlike the IRA or the Viet Cong. And the establishment will rely on MVD, internal security, type force, and massive suppression of civil liberties, okay, to try to combat that. And remember, I've read to you from the document, have I not? I remember Greg Evenson and I covered this one night as well. And it was the document I've read to you. It's called Domestic Insurgency and the Declaration of Martial Law And this was signed by W. Bush. There were directives which were then embodied in the following U.S. Army document, you see. And it was shortly after November 2008 presidential election he did this. Okay, but this document was 12 October 2008. And it talks all about what they're going to do to you, okay? And who domestic insurgents are and all the different things. And what they're going to do. Now, they talk about it in different ways these days, which is basically they talk about it in terms of backing up the local governments. We just saw this, did we not? Marine Corps to be backing up the local, governments and all that kind of stuff. And then they're going to put in the fusion hives. If you don't know about it, in somewhere in your state, two or three of them, there are fusion hives, usually in each of the major cities. And they have the big screens and they watch everything. They watch all the traffic cameras. They tie into all the other cameras in the buildings and the apartment houses and all the stuff. And they're talking about surveilling, covert surveillance. They talk about block control, informant nets. All the different things. And they talk about, well, you say, Hawk, well, you know, there's too many guns in America. They can't come for all of us at all at one time. That is right. But listen to me and listen good. They can come to one neighborhood. They can use armor to block the streets off. They can put a helo or two up above. Watch it with the satellite. Tap into all of your doorbell cameras. Ring doorbell, you know. Your TVs, your fax machines, your computers are going to turn it all on. They're going to listen to you and watch you. So if you're going to go out the front door, tell them you're going out the back, you see. They also have the ability to look through a wall with electronics. They can look right through the wall and reconstruct what's inside on the other side, even of a concrete wall. That facility was in some of the Stryker vehicles that General Motors built a while back for the war in Iraq. But what they can do is then go to one block or one neighborhood, you know, like a homeowners association in some towns or cities, you know, where it's, you know, it's a nice little neighborhood and you know, Holly Hills or Hoopa Doopa, a country club lane or whatever it is, okay? And they can block the accesses off, put the helo up above, gunship, and they can go door to door with, several platoons, you know? And yes, there could be resistance, but, you know, that helicopter gunship or the armored vehicle or the up-armored Humvee with a 50 or a 20 mic on it. That's 20 millimeter. Pa-ba-ba-ba, man. You know, they can rip it up pretty good. But mostly you're going to see them pop the door, throw a flashbang in, hit the door, check it all out, clear everybody out, bring them all out, put them into the truck. After, you know, you take care of maybe the good-looking boys or the good-looking girls, depending upon the troops, you see. And then your daddy and you're saying, well, by golly, I've got my constitutional right. Pop, pop, dead duck laying on the front lawn. Hopefully you had it all neatly trimmed. And they'll just leave you right there and they'll take all your goods, everything you got, or maybe old Captain so-and-so will like your house and he'll just decide that he's going to tag that for him, or Sergeant McGillicuddy thinks it'll be good, or Sergeant Chin, you know, or maybe Iranian Joe or Russian Samsky, you know? Whoever the troops are going to be. So they can do that. Now, at that point in time, you would want to try to make them pay in a Solzhenitsyn kind of a way, would you not? And you would not want to have that something go into your Luciferian night without a fight, would you? And how we burned in the camps later, thinking, what would have things have been like if every security operative, when he went out at night to make an arrest, had been uncertain whether he would return alive and had to say goodbye to his family, or if during periods of mass arrests, as for example in Leningrad, when they arrested a quarter of the entire city. Leningrad was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of, back then, maybe 500,000 people, something like that. And if people had not simply sat there in their lairs, paling with terror at every bang of the downstairs door, or at every step on the staircase, but had understood they had nothing left to lose, and had boldly set up in the downstairs hall an ambush of a half a dozen people with axes, hammers, pokers, or whatever else was at hand, like, 12-gauge pumps, you know, with double-aught buck, you know, a few handguns, a rifle or two, you know what I'm saying? Let alone if you had a Ronnie Barrett special, you might just interrupt a few days with that, and you might cause some browned backsides of some boys out in the field, you know what I mean? So, if you didn't do that, but you waited at the downstairs hall, you know, and you had whatever was to hand, right? And the Organs would then very quickly have suffered a shortage of officers and transport. And notwithstanding all of Stalin's thirst, is that Bernie who went to Soviet Union on his honeymoon's thirst? Or is it Kama Chameleon's thirst? Or Beto, not try to take him? Or is it Elizabeth Pocahontas Warren who wants to get back at the white man, okay, for taking away her heritage, you see, which is not her heritage. I have a real good friend in the Wasatch that has a heritage. Hello to my friend out there, old Crazy Horse. God bless you. So you see, ladies and gentlemen, Solzhenitsyn then says the whole thing would have ground to a halt if they'd have fought it. And he said, if we didn't love freedom enough, but even more, we had no awareness of the real situation. In other words, you just hid out in the tunnel from the mega church to the mall, all right, and didn't pay attention. He said, if we didn't love freedom enough and even more, we had no awareness of the real situation, then we purely and simply deserved everything that happened afterward. Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And he spent a lot of time in the Gulag Archipelago, and he wrote all about it, making gloves. So you're going to see the guerrilla warfare phase kick in at some point in time, and there will be ethnic cleansing. Gangs will become primarily political in their goals and shift into paramilitary mode. Modern-day tribal riots with barricades and sieges of police stations will become common. Radical, ethnically oriented parties will win local and even state elections. Car and truck bombs will become common. Assassinations of police officers and minor politicians will become common. That is already starting to become common, and that tells me that we're entering the guerrilla warfare phase. And to all the peace officers out there, you need to pay attention to that and guard against it. And look at all of these Muslim types, you see. But then it goes into really nastier stuff, you see. There will be mutinies in the military, firefights for control of military bases. That's already happened, allegedly. Remember when we had old information up there at Dayton when the at the old Pity Pat, right, Pat, where we had, remember old Hawk told you about how they were, somebody told him that they were listening on a channel and that they saw also that a Russian Kiowa helicopter turned on its squawk at about 30,000 feet when the ceiling for the Kiowa was about 17,000 altitude. And then that meant it was in an Antonov and it was landing at Wright Pat. And then you remember that that particular one landed at Wright Pat, and then obviously it then took off, and you remember that went to a little place, allegedly, which is at the corner of Hamilton, Warren counties, you know, et cetera, where the old Voice of America is at down in the underground. Up top, it's just a nice little park and a blockhouse and a few security and nothing to see there at all, but underneath it's state-of-the-art. And was the original place that could take over all communication in the United States. And this was back during Obama, the lizard's reign. And you know that somebody with an accent that was like Western Kansas or Nebraska, which is a non-accent English accent, just happened to have landed, and then he allegedly went in and did and ran all of the military, U.S. military's communication, HF communication, with that same Nebraska, Western Kansas, non-accent, English accent, for about the next 10 or 12 hours. And that's when Obama brought in the Spetsnaz. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, this stuff is going to get weird. And I'm going to tell you what, I'm thinking about all my grandmas, my little old ladies who are tough, and they got the firearms, but I also think about them being able to have back just a little bit to have a cup of coffee for somebody that you see coming through the backyard running from somebody, and yet you know him because he's the good guy, you know, two doors down who has been fighting against whatever was coming down the pike, the motorcycle gang, the street gang, the Chinese gang, the Spetsnaz group, the cannibals from Cannibal City who have got the shopping carts. And if you remember ever reading the book, you know, James Wesley Rawls, you know, book, Patriots, you know, Surviving the Coming Collapse, the Teotihuacan, the first Teotihuacan, The End of the World as We Know It book. That is what's going to come. That if you can maybe give a guy a little bit of cup of coffee, you know, maybe a little cracker and some peanut butter on it, or a slice of good old Spam or something like that, or a cup of soup, it's going to make a lot of difference. So if you cannot be that person who's trying to defend the neighborhood, when it all does go goopy, you can be, and you'll have to be, the person to defend your own home. But at some point, you might be able to give comfort to the enemy, just like old Jesse and Frank James and old Quantrill and the boys and Bloody Bill Anderson and all them old boys used to hoorah them towns, you know? Pistoleros, you know, like the Josie Wales kind of movie, you know. But when you have somebody that's really good, you know, like Jesse or Frank James or the younger brothers, And they're carrying six or seven revolvers all loaded to the max, and they ride in town at a full gallop, and they're shooting under the horse's neck and over the horse's neck, and they're going pow, 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 pow. They hoorah them towns, okay? But you'd better start to get your kids ready for it. And at least tell them something might happen. If you have them in a time where they're interested in karate or, you know, something like that, or judo or jujitsu, then by all means, get them involved in it. But get them with a sensei or with the, whoever the martial arts teacher is. Get them with somebody who teaches them actual self-defense. And it's not going for the golden belt in the sky crowd and all of that, and the high kicks to kick Chinese men off horses, you know. No, what you want is somebody who can, with the one move, take somebody down and put them out with a one move. That would be the optimum thing. That means with one first punch, one first throw, one first chop, whatever it might be, taken completely out. But if it's boxing or whatever it is, teach them something. Get them on the 22, you know, and teach them how to shoot a 22 or the 410 shotgun or a 20 gauge or heck, work them up to the 12 gauge. Show them the other rifles, but get them out and teach them something about how to do it. How to clean a firearm, how to sharpen a knife. If you do any hunting, then teach them about field craft and concealment and camouflage and, you know, protecting yourself from detection by an animal or a human. Don't go into the Lucifer knife without a fight. Want to keep old Hawk in the game? Hawk, 3965 West 83rd Street, number 356, Prairie Village, Kansas, 66208. May the mighty women of men of valor use their high technology to strike blows against the Luciferians in their lairs. And people pray those imprecatory prayers, and pray against those evil people that would destroy this nation of evil president, or that would come for you to grab your job. Turn into some kind of a transhumanist sect. Tango Rangers, I know you're ready out there. Take the contact, General. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Lord Jesus, protect against all evil.